Opioid usage has boomed since the beginning of the 21st century, with their use as prescription drugs almost tripling in the last two decades. Dependency on the euphoric properties of opioids has led many who started off needing them for pain to seek more illegal substances like heroin. On this week's Eastern Standard, we'll discuss the addiction epidemic, now a national medical emergency, and what the government and others are doing to address the growing problem.
You don't teach a child just say no. You have to give them the reasons for saying no. You have to give them options. You have to give them other ways to say no. You have to build a foundation for making other healthy choices.
We're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories about the opioid epidemic. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. In a few minutes, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Just 2 weeks ago, President Trump declared the opioid epidemic across the U.S. a national emergency. And one of the areas where this epidemic has been most evident is right here in our region, central and eastern Kentucky, West Virginia, Ohio, and the entire Appalachian region. On this week's Eastern Standard, we'll talk about the opioid epidemic and the national emergency. We'll talk with some folks who have been reporting on the epidemic and folks who are working to help alleviate that epidemic in their communities, as well as a person recovering, in recovery, which I understand is a process. It's never over and it's never completed. We're interested in hearing from you during today's Eastern Standard. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest, or we'll open the phone lines in a little while and you'll be able to get on the air with us at 800-621-8890. That number again, 800-621-8890. There is one email already waiting for us at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Let me introduce our guests, at least for the first segment of our program today. We have on Skype Aaron Payne, and Aaron is the reporter covering the opioid epidemic for the Ohio Valley Resource. Listeners have heard his voice on the air numerous times. He's been on with us on Eastern Standard a couple of times, and part of his job, he's keeping an eye on the opioid epidemic. And Aaron Payne, thank you so much for joining us by Skype today.
Good morning.
We're going to ask you in just a few minutes about the latest that you are hearing across this region of the Ohio Valley, and hope to get our listeners to interact with Aaron about the research and the reporting that he has done. With us in the studio is Alex Elswick, and Alex has been here before, at least one time before. Alex is co-founder of a nonprofit organization called Voices of Hope Lexington Incorporated that mobilizes the local community to support recovery. He's also a PhD student at the University of Kentucky, where his research is focusing on barriers to long-term recovery from substance abuse disorders. But perhaps most importantly, Alex is a person in long-term recovery from heroin addiction, and 4 years recovery.
4 years. It's good to be back with you, John.
Thank you, Alex, for being here, and congratulations once again on your recovery. Actually, by your knowledge and your understanding, your research, where does 4 years fit in that picture? Aren't a lot of people in recovery for very brief periods of time before they have relapses? And I guess 4 years sounds like you're well on the road to perhaps never even experiencing a relapse in the future.
Yeah, the research seems to indicate that 5 years is a critical marker, that at 5 years, relapse rates are down to about 13%. So I'm getting close, but as you said, recovery is a process. It's ongoing, so never there.
And, of course, for your work, we're collaborating with your mom, and we had her in the studio just a few months ago. That, I'm sure, is helping to keep you on target.
Absolutely.
And the public eye is on you quite a bit. One of the things, later in the program, we'll speak with Colleen Chaney. Colleen is Deputy Judge Executive for Madison County, and we understand that Madison County has announced a new public-private partnership to deal with drug abuse and to reduce the jail population in the county, and we will get to Colleen Chaney in just a few minutes, but we have a number of things we want to get done in this first segment of the program. First up, there is some news out of Lexington. Mayor Jim Gray and a group of others made an announcement this morning of what they're calling the next step in Lexington-Fayette County's war against drug abuse. They have announced that they are filing a lawsuit against manufacturers and distributors of opiates. And just a little while ago, prior to the news conference that he held at City Hall, I spoke with Mayor Jim Gray about that announcement.
This morning, John, we're taking the next step in our war on opioids. We're filing a lawsuit to hold the wholesale drug distributors and manufacturers accountable for dumping opioids into and onto our city and our people. And, you know, profits are important to businesses, but we should never put profits over people. And people's lives are being lost, and families are being affected in such serious ways. Our economy is being affected. This is causing and costing tens of millions of dollars to our cities, to cities and communities around us, and this is simply the right thing to do.
You say you're filing this lawsuit against 10 to 15 manufacturers and distributors. Can you name some of them?
The names of those companies, the pharmaceutical companies, that's still being developed. The law firm Levin Papantonio is dealing with the lawsuit, and the firms, those names will be revealed and distributed shortly.
You say that the suit is against these companies for dumping opioids into Lexington. How do you define dumping?
Today, there are millions of more pills than there are people in our country. And that illustrates itself that this is putting profits over people. What we know is that this is not right. This is not clearly not healthy for our city and for our citizens and for our country. And this is why we're taking these steps.
Is there a dollar figure that you're applying to this lawsuit? How much are you asking from these companies?
Yeah, those numbers are still being developed.
And you have put together a group of faith-based communities, social service agencies, police officers, firefighters, corrections officers, health department, parents of those who've lost the children to opioid abuse. What's the significance? What's the meaning of putting that group together?
The group that we've assembled and asked to join us today illustrates just how deeply this epidemic and this scourge is affecting our city and affecting our region, affecting our state, and affecting our country. And we're illustrating this by those who are joining us today hand in hand and saying, you know, this is an epidemic. This is a war that we must wage. Even just last week, of course, the president declared it a national health emergency. And these are the actions that must be taken in order to fight this war.
How do you view the president's declaration of an emergency? Do you think that will make an impact? Will it help Lexington?
Declaring a national health emergency is a step in the right direction. We all know that this is becoming a much more serious problem. It's become a much more serious problem. Just here, just in Lexington alone, the number of fatalities from overdoses has doubled in 3 years. And we know that it's affecting our whole region, counties around us in the similar ways. And Lexington is the center of our Central Kentucky region, and it's a responsibility that we have to illuminate this problem and to fight it.
Mayor Jim Gray announcing this morning that Lexington is filing a lawsuit against the 10 to 15 manufacturers or distributors of opioid drugs, and being seen as the region's and the Lexington Fayette County's latest effort in the war on drug abuse. Aaron Payne is reporter for the Ohio Valley Resource and is on the line with us via Skype. Aaron, talk about the lawsuits that have been filed. I understand Lexington Fayette County is the 35th in Kentucky to do so. What do you know about these lawsuits that are being filed by communities in our region, and what impact do you think they will have?
Well, the impact these lawsuits will have is unknown at this time. There are quite a few lawsuits that are being filed in Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia against opioid manufacturers, distributors, and pharmacies. It's hard to keep track of just how many there are across the region because there's more and more every day. Of course, Lexington, the most recent city to file such a lawsuit. But the impact it could have is plaintiffs are trying to hold accountable the organizations and institutions that have put these opioid painkillers on the market and into the hands of consumers. They want them to take some sort of responsibility for the opioid epidemic. There is a parallel to, if you'll remember, the tobacco lawsuits that ended in a major settlement that with millions and millions of dollars across the country. People are drawing parallels to the tobacco lawsuits, to the opioid epidemic, but the issue is there were thousands of plaintiffs in the tobacco lawsuits. There are thousands and thousands and thousands potentially across the country in this opioid epidemic. So it's a bit of a land grab, potentially, to get these funds through settlements or through jury decisions. And it may not be the best way to fund efforts to curb the opioid crisis because the funding is, of course, limited. So it could potentially run out with all these thousands and thousands of plaintiffs trying to hold these companies responsible.
Well, Aaron, you know, I know you were covering the president's announcement just 2 weeks ago today, the president's declaration of a national emergency. What kind of resources is the Trump administration devoting to this crisis?
Ideas put forth by the president and his administration with the national public health emergency is regulatory in nature. A major part of it that would help this region is the IMD exclusion waivers. Back in the 1960s, there was an effort to prevent warehouses of mental health patients, where you had hundreds and hundreds of mental health patients in one facility. So the IMD exclusion was set up so that it would basically force more individual care of these people with mental health disorders and prevented Medicaid payments to go to facilities with over 16 beds. And now here in the opioid epidemic, we have an issue where there are just not enough treatment beds for these individuals with substance use disorders. And getting an exclusion to that will open up more treatment beds in this region.
So you're saying in regulatory, this will open up laws and allow local governments and organizations to take steps they otherwise were prohibited from doing. But any funds dedicated to the war on opioids at this point that you're aware of?
No new funding. There is permissions being given to shift around other funding that is already in existence. Say, for instance, money dedicated to fighting HIV is now being permitted to be used for the opioid epidemic.
Okay, Aaron Payne, reporter for the Ohio Valley Resource, covering the opioid beat, is going to be with us for the rest of the hour. We need to take a short break. This is Eastern Standard. You're welcome to email your question, comment, or story, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. The president declared a national emergency regarding the opioid epidemic just 2 weeks ago, and we're discussing that national emergency, its impact on our region, the nature of the problem, and we have a lot to accomplish during today's program, but you're welcome to be part of the show. Email us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or give us a call, 800-621-8890. With us in the studio is Alex Ellswick, co-founder of Voices of Hope and himself in long-term recovery from heroin addiction. We have Aaron Payne, reporter for the Ohio Valley Resource, covering the opioid beat. He's on the line with us via Skype. And now on the line, I want to introduce Colleen Cheney. Colleen is deputy judge executive for Madison County. And Madison County has just announced a new public-private partnership, as I understand it. Colleen, thank you for being with us. Can you tell us about the public-private partnership announced in Madison County?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And I have to say that this is a topic that is near and dear to our citizens in Madison County. And the fact that we are able to step out and talk with you all about this with such a great panel, we appreciate it. We recently, in the last 2 years, I would say, have started a process out of Madison County government with our Madison County Fiscal Court in conjunction with our Judge Executive Reagan Taylor to look at a possibility of having what we call a healing center, which is a public-private partnership combining the efforts of the public sector in our fiscal court with an operations entity for substance and workforce-related programming. And so where we are currently is we put an RFP out. We had 35 individuals attend that mandatory pre-bid meeting from across the country. We ended up having 11 proposals come in. And we have narrowed those down to three. We have five that we are looking at, but three that have come back for pitch meetings last week. And where we are in that process now is trying to find a partner that is interested in working with us with a diversion program, identifying individuals that are users who are going through our judicial system in Madison County that would either be on release, on early release, or would be through our detention center, and moving them through a program, a three-phased program of intensive detox, in addition, life skills, and then moving into workforce. And that program is one that we are excited to pursue, and the model that has been introduced in the General Assembly last year, public-private partnership, we are planning to be the first public-private partnership to go through under that new legislation for a governmental entity.
That sounds exciting for Madison County to make this move. Now, let's talk about the nature of the problem in Madison County. I know we've discussed this before, but sure. Am I correct that something like 80% of the folks in the detention center here in Richmond are there because of drug offenses?
Correct. We have an overcrowding issue, as do most counties throughout the state. And in our detention center, we have 186 beds, and we have 400-plus inmates in our facility. And some of those are housed in detention centers in other counties, but regardless, we have an extensive overcrowding issue. 80% are in for some drug-related crime, while it may be combined with other issues. Most of them are going to be, either paraphernalia, stealing, prostitution, where they either have drugs on their person or were using at the time in which they were committing another crime. Of our 80% that are in for drug-related, we have a 75, and I would even argue that was a year ago, I'd say we're probably up to about a 78% recidivism rate. And so when we look at the population that we have going through our detention center, we are seeing the same individuals coming through our system. And we are not doing anything at this point to address how they live their lives after they leave our detention center. And then in addition, when you look at our population, we're a growing county, but we see such a strain on our public services. A lot of people have questioned, is a public-private partnership, is this really the role of government? And I will tell you that for us, we see that the public-private partnership is the perfect opportunity because right now, as we're looking at it, the drug issue isn't just affecting our detention center. It's affecting our sheriff's department. We end up putting about $1.4 million in additional general fund revenue to offset our sheriff due to the opioid issue. Our employers cannot find workforce. We've been working with our industrial partners and our Chamber of Commerce. And our education system, we've just started a prevention program in our school system, in the Madison County school system. But even our schools are having to prepare their teachers with the ability to use Narcan in the classroom. And so the issue for us is bigger. If you were to put 100 people from Madison County in a room and ask them to raise their hand and say, how many in this room have been affected by one degree of separation from drug use, I would think it is safe to say that you would have about 85 to 90% of those individuals raise their hands.
Wow. So, and when we talk about drug use, oftentimes people will refer to it as a victimless crime. You're saying these folks are all in some form victims because they've been affected.
Absolutely. I mean, what we see is because we are on I-75, we have six interchanges, we have a major university, and we are the halfway point between Detroit and Florida. We find ourselves to be a hotbed and a stop for individuals that are coming up the interstate that are stopping in Madison County. If you were to talk to the Kentucky State Police, they would tell you that there is something very unique going on in Madison County beyond just opioid. But in addition to a topic you just talked about, which is prescription pills, if you look at a heat map of the state of Kentucky, Madison County is the highest percent for methamphetamine use, opioid use, and prescription pill use. And so we have a multifaceted substance issue in Madison County that is across the board affecting all sectors of our citizens.
Now, Colleen Chaney, again, Colleen is a deputy judge executive for Madison County. You talk about you've got an RFP out there for a healing center to deal with drug issues in Madison County. What will that be? Is that a building? Is that a new facility that's going to be constructed? Tell us how that's going to work.
That's a great question. You know, the beauty of a public-private partnership is that we are able to take the best concepts from the private sector, as well as from the public sector, the health area, and the educational sector. We have a lot of individuals that are doing research in this topic that have weighed in on our discussion. What we are looking to do is have the best idea come forward. And so we as a county are flexible to what that looks like. But the concept would be that we as a county would own the land and own the building, and then we would have an entity or entities that would then lease that facility from us. But what makes this unique is that it's truly a partnership, and when we communicated to each of the individuals that came in, we expressed to them, this is not a scenario where we want you to come in and we just have an exchange of money. This is a dynamic process that we want to make sure that we as the county are using our resources and our understanding of our community to pull and maximize all of the available resources to aid that that operator. And I will say that the excitement around this project has stunned me. I have familiarity with this topic. Our judge executive has firsthand family examples of how drug abuse has affected them, having a cousin who passed away last year, as well as family members that are in recovery right now. It hits very close to home for us. But the excitement around the concept of not just looking at medical detox at 30 to 45 days, but actually looking at a long-term option where we set individuals up with mentors in the community when they leave us, when we are looking to look at jobs beyond just a minimum wage job with our industrial partners. Our industrial partners are excited, our educational community, we have a wonderful opportunity with Eastern Kentucky University. We've been in talks with them about a variety of ways in which their student population could gain skills in this area. So we are very excited. Unite has been a wonderful advocate and asset for us. And we've also been working with the corrections industry. And Secretary Tilley, as well as many of our leaders in government, have been very supportive.
Now, Colleen, to what extent is the president's announcement of a national emergency? Will it have an impact on this effort in Madison County? Was this underway before the announcement? Do you expect any resources from the federal government as a result of this emergency declaration?
Sure. For us, we've been working on this project since our judge executive took office. Our detention center had a $2.7 million debt service on it before we even addressed what the population was. And then when we looked, we brought a jail task force together to say, what are we going to do about the overcrowding our detention center? And, you know, the numbers looked like we would need to build a $50 million detention center to house 800 people if you were to look at our indictment records. Now, we can build an 800-person, $50 million detention center. We could do that. That would be the easy route. But we are not dealing with the actual problem. And so our judge has taken on the mantra of heal, not house, and try to really end that systemic cycle. President Trump's announcement reinforces what we knew locally. We, too, much like Lexington, we signed on 6 months ago to that opioid legislation. litigation initiative, we recognize that it is creating an opportunity for a conversation. We are not naive. We know how federal dollars and state dollars work. In our program, we do not want to be designed solely on what we can get from government, but rather what we can do to eliminate the costs that we're incurring in our general fund, and in those savings, find an opportunity to reinvest. Now, clearly, resources will become available, and we will take advantage of that. But we are not relying on that announcement to do anything more than reinforce the issue and hopefully help in leading to some policy changes and regulatory changes that would aid in our fight.
Colleen Chaney is the Deputy Judge Executive for Madison County on the line with us. And we also have two other experts on the opioid emergency in the studio with us, an expert who's lived it in his own life and now doing research on the subject, Alex Ellswick. Alex, how do you respond to what you're hearing about this effort in Madison County?
Yeah, I think something that I heard Ms. Chaney say that really speaks to me is she spoke about the lack of support that people who are convicted of drug offenses experience after they're released. And that's really the focus of my research, is we know that addiction is a chronic disorder of the brain, and yet our big failure on a policy level and a practical level has been we treat it on an acute basis. We pour an immense amount of resources, financial capital, human capital, social capital, when we get somebody into treatment, but when they walk out after 30 days, we hand them a pamphlet with a list of 12-step meetings and say, don't use. And that's a failure on our part to protect our investment. And so what I'm hearing from her is a focus on what we call recovery capital, which is expanding access to resources that support recovery over the long term.
Can you think of other examples of anything like this being done?
Well, that's what we're trying to do with Voices of Hope in Lexington. We're actually piloting a program called Telephone Recovery Support, which essentially partners with halfway houses in the community. And we just call folks who are in the halfway houses weekly or biweekly to check in and say, basically, how can I help you with your recovery today? And that could look like any number of things. Maybe they need dental work and they don't know where to go get that done. Or maybe they need help taking care of a debt or getting their record expunged. It could be any number of things. We're just trying to eliminate barriers to recovery.
Aaron Payne, reporter from the Ohio Valley Resource, reporting on the opioid crisis. Your reaction to what you're hearing here in Madison County, and are you hearing of other efforts that are similar to this? How does this fit into the picture of what you're seeing across our region?
I think you're seeing a trend of corrections facilities trying to do what Madison County is doing, and Alex is right, getting these individuals wraparound services to help them in their recovery, such as housing, job training, and the like, is very important to putting a dent in this opioid crisis. In some parts of our region, you'll see correctional facilities that they will give individuals a shot of Vivitrol, which is a medication that helps curb one's addiction, but then they don't have the services that help them get back out and achieve the even the first step to long-term recovery. So to see, you're seeing correctional facilities and law enforcement initiatives that are really going the way of Madison County.
You know, you mentioned, Aaron, Vivitrol as a part of a process that is being used by some communities. I know WEKU Sherry Lawson did a story a few weeks ago that we may not have time to air this morning, but reporting on what's happening in Kenton County, in northern Kentucky, and that's part of their program, the folks who are in their within the detention system, they're participating in a program of recovery. And Vivitrol is, I think, that's what they're sent out the door with, Alex, given a shot. Your reaction and your impression of how that is working?
Yeah, I think there's a really strong evidence base for medication-assisted treatments like Suboxone and methadone, and for the use of something like Vivitrol. I think that's a great way to give somebody some additional support as they're walking out the door. But as Aaron alluded to, it's much more than that. It's a continuum of care that involves social services, that involves mental health, addressing mental health issues, and the list goes on and on.
Colleen Chaney, Deputy Judge Executive for Madison County. Will the Healing Center in Madison County involve a drug-assisted element?
For medical-assisted treatment?
Medical-assisted, yes.
All of those individuals that have brought proposals forward have had some component of medical-assisted treatment. And so that's something that we recognize as a component as well. You know, what Eric said, especially for us, is exactly where we feel we need to go. We researched around the country. There are many, many places that do medical detox, but it is that after programming, that post-departure programming, that seems to be the difference maker in individuals that are able to hit the five-year mark of clean and sober. So for us, you know, we have an issue in our community that we need the individuals who are currently drug users to be clean and participatory members, to be taxpayers, to be business owners, to be taking care of their children. And that requires a whole new level of education for many individuals in this cycle, and it certainly isn't everyone, but a lot of the individuals that we see in our detention center are in a cyclical environment. We have three and four generations of individuals in our detention center at the same time, and mothers who are pregnant. The cycle, in order to stop that cycle, you have to acknowledge the fact that individuals do not necessarily have the tools, the basic tools that we all take for granted, when they enter back into the workforce. And so to just say, and not even just workforce, life skills, family skills, how do you deal with conflict management, beyond the GED process, but behavioral components. And I think something else that was mentioned is the fact that there are a lot of mental health issues here that when you are using go undiagnosed or unrecognized or untreated. And so that is a component that we really feel strongly needs to be addressed as well in our program.
We have an email from Mark in Versailles, and Mark writes, I paid close attention to the General Assembly in 2010 when pill mill legislation was passed. At the time, I personally disagreed with the tactics of shutting down access to pills cold turkey because there were already reports of black tar heroin filtering in through Ohio. I had concerns that we were trading the devil we knew for the one we didn't. Although pills were a scourge, overdoses weren't as high of a risk as unregulated black market drugs. Does the panel believe cold turkey crackdowns on pills is partially responsible for the overdose epidemic that we now face? Alex.
Yeah, I mean, there's an established pathway. That I think something like 80% of people who are using heroin currently started with prescription pain medication. So I think in that respect, it's true. But I also don't know on a policy level. I mean, I'm not a policy wonk, so I can't speak to it. But I really don't know what else you do. You have to crack down on the pill mills, I mean, I think.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU station. So we're going to take another short break and be back as we continue talking about the opioid emergency in our region. Colleen Chaney, I don't know if are you able to stay on the line with us for a few more minutes?
I'm good. I can stay as long as you'll have me.
Excellent. Glad, because I know at one point we weren't concerned about that. Excellent. We'll have Colleen Chaney with us. We have Alex Ellswick with us. We have Aaron Payne, reporter for the Ohio Valley Resource. You're welcome to join in the conversation. 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, as we discuss the opioid emergency on this week's Eastern Standard. 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. 2 weeks ago, the president announced an opioid emergency, a national medical emergency. We're talking about that announcement. We're talking about the emergency and its impact on our region. You're welcome to be part of our conversation, 800-621-8890, or email us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. On the line with us is Colleen Chaney, Deputy Judge Executive for Madison County. In the studio, Alex Ellswick, he's in long-term recovery from heroin addiction and co-founder of Voices of Hope Lexington. Aaron Payne, reporter for the Ohio Valley Resource, is on the line with us on Skype this morning as well. And I do want to go to the story that Sherry Lawson produced for us. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention lists Kentucky among the three states with the highest rates of death due to drug overdose. WEKU's Sherry Lawson prepared this report saying that while there's no easy answer, officials who run a northern Kentucky jail believe they have a program that could be part of the solution using medication-assisted treatment.
Up on the side of a hill in northern Kentucky sits the Kenton County Detention Center. Outside, the landscape is beautiful and the building looks sleek. Inside, the jail is overcrowded. More than 700 men and women are locked up here. 25-year-old Tevin is wide-eyed, tattoos on his arms name two of his five kids. He looks like a kid himself. He wears a black beard and mustache that cover his baby face. He recalls one of the many times he's been in jail.
I was incarcerated for possession of a controlled substance. I was using heroin, and it was the worst time of my life. I would never want to go back to that again, you know.
But Tevin is back in jail. He says he was drinking, taking drugs, and had anger issues. He doesn't want to share his last name or why he's here because of his pending case. But this time, instead of doing his time with the general population, he's one of 125 inmates volunteering for an evidence-based substance abuse program. Every morning, he's up early participating in a very structured routine. It includes classes, reflection and affirmation, meditation, counseling, and 12-step meetings.
My name is Jason. I'm an alcoholic. Afternoon, guys.
It's calmed me down a lot.
Sorry to interrupt.
You know, I was kind of stubborn and arrogant about myself. I didn't care what anybody had to say, but the stuff that we read about, it really tells you about the human mind and addictive thinking and criminal thinking.
Jail substance abuse programs aren't a new concept, says Director Jason Merrick. The 46-year-old was hired in 2015 to run the Kenton County Detention Center's program. He's been sober since 2009 and spent some time incarcerated. Now he has a master's degree. He knows firsthand it may not be easy, but sobriety and healing are possible.
Biologically, we recognize the addiction as a disease. Psychologically, we treat behaviors and thinking patterns. So cognitive behavioral therapy is a big part of our program. You know, we give people an opportunity to change their behaviors. We give them resources. We give them opportunities to reenter society better than they were when they became incarcerated.
In addition to the classes and support groups, the program now includes a medication-assisted component. When the inmates are ready to leave jail, they're offered a shot of Vivitrol or Naltrexone if they are medically appropriate. The drug blocks effects of opiates for a month and helps reduce cravings. The Vivitrol program is completely voluntary and in some circles controversial.
It was obvious that we needed something to help these inmates because they were going out, leaving here and overdosing, and majority of them were dying.
Terry Carl has held the elected office of jailer for 19 years. At a time when the opioid epidemic is a national crisis, he believes the program at Kenton County Detention Center is making a difference.
We're only treating a small group out of the population, but how that small group, you know, 70%, which I think is great, it's not coming back to jail.
Kenton County Detention Center is one of four jails in Kentucky using the substance abuse program in conjunction with a medically assisted treatment, says Kevin Pangburn, director of substance abuse services for the Kentucky Department of Corrections.
Other states have been sent here to train on what it is that we do to follow our protocol in terms of treatment and medically assisted treatment.
As for inmate Tevin, he admits to having some fear about getting released from jail, but he's hopeful this time he won't be back.
Hopefully my future is looking good. I can go home and be the dad that I always wanted to be. That's the future for me. I just want to be a good dad.
The Kenton County Medically Assisted Treatment Program may not be perfect, but those who administer it believe it's a start in addressing the opioid epidemic. For WEKU, I'm Sherry Lawson.
This is Eastern Standard on WEKU, the opioid emergency, our topic on this morning's program. Again, one of the examples of an effort to fight the opioid crisis. We had an announcement this morning that Lexington is filing a lawsuit to hold wholesale drug distributors and manufacturers accountable for dumping opiates into the city, announced by Mayor Jim Gray that you heard earlier in the program. Madison County have an RFP, a request for proposals out there for a healing center, sounding like it could be an innovative program. I guess Colleen Chaney, again, a deputy judge executive, the details of that yet to be determined?
The details of our program?
Yes.
We hope to have a final decision, at least on the operator, in the next month and a half. And at that point, then we will move forward to bidding out the construction, assuming that all of the financial and contractual arrangements are able to be worked out.
And Aaron Payne, reporter for the Ohio Valley Resource, the report we just aired about the medically assisted program in Kenton County. What are you hearing about such programs? Is this a widespread effort across our region in southeastern Ohio, in West Virginia, in Kentucky?
It's starting to be widespread. Some of these programs are in their infancy. It seems like the program we heard in the report is a little more advanced than some of these programs, but you're starting to see correctional facilities embrace their role in curbing the opioid crisis in this manner.
Earlier in the week, another person we spoke to, another expert, as a matter of fact, Colleen Cheney referred to Operation Unite. Nancy Hale is executive director of Operation Unite, which is Unlawful Narcotics Investigations, Treatment, and Education, reflecting a three-pronged comprehensive approach to combating substance abuse in Kentucky, started in April of 2003 by Congressman Hal Rogers. And I'd like to share a segment of an interview that I did with Nancy Hale talking about her Operation Unite.
His opioid commission, you know, had urged that along back in July when they put out their interim report. And because of that emergency declaration that he's made, you know, it allows the president to direct all federal agencies to speed aid to those localities in the grip of, I think he called it the worst drug crisis in American history. And so it's going to have an impact, definitely. You know, we don't know exactly. We can't predict specifically what's going to happen in Kentucky. But, you know, that the Opioid Commission, his proclamation, is going to definitely have an impact. I think one of the things the commission, when they issued their report, their final draft report, I think it was on November 1st, there were so many things. I mean, it's 138 pages, but over 50 recommendations. But one of those was calling for expanding drug courts, which we have seen just the power and, you know, drug courts do work here in Kentucky. We've seen that. Expanding those drug courts to all, I think they're in like 94 federal court jurisdictions. Currently, there are over half of those that have drug courts. And in Kentucky, we have drug courts in 113 of our counties, those specialty courts. You know, in the 5th Congressional District, we've seen the impact of the drug courts. You know, this is an alternative system that channels substance abusers who've been accused of crimes, not felonies, but it helps them get into treatment and through the drug court program.
If President Trump and the commission were to call you and ask your advice or ask what are your needs with Operation Unite, what resources would you like to have if they could be provided by the federal government?
For Operation Unite and for the state of Kentucky, if I had a wish list and they could say, here's what the money that you need, I think one of the things that we would want to see is a evidence-based K-12 prevention curriculum in all of our schools that is mandated, required to be taught, and assessed. You've got to build the foundation. Prevention is always building a foundation. And we've been very reactive with the opioid epidemic, the drug crisis. We've had to react because it hit us in the face. But, you know, it's like Lieutenant Governor Rutherford from Maryland made this. He said, you know, we're all in this boat together. We all agree with that. It's a nationwide crisis, but our boat has a hole in it. And for so long, we've been paying someone to bail water out of the boat when we need to plug the hole, and the plug is going to come from prevention. And so we've got to start building that foundation of young people to help them never, ever use, never take the first, you know, to abstain from using any type, whether it's alcohol or tobacco or illicit drugs. So that would be one thing. I would want funding to train our teachers and put in a K-12 prevention curriculum statewide. I think another thing that I would ask for is for a certified drug and alcohol counselor, a guidance counselor to be placed in our middle schools and high schools. Unite had a grant several years ago where we were able to do that within the 5th Congressional District. And those men and women who were those counselors, you know, were not tied down by all of the red tape of dealing with assessment programs and all of the things that our school counselors today contend with. And they were able to really impact the students and the students' families. And then I think I would probably, my third thing, if I had a wish list of three, I would ask for more residential treatment programs for pregnant moms that would take them through helping them move into sobriety and recovery. But after their babies are born, they would remain in that program to help them learn how to be a sober, good mother and help them teach parenting skills to them and help them get GEDs or find employment or whatever. We need more of those residential treatment facilities for pregnant moms.
Nancy Hale, Executive Director of Operation Unite, I believe she said serving 35 counties. So, originated by 5th District Congressman Hal Rogers, and I know Colleen Cheney of Madison County, you referred to Operation Unite. I understand that Madison County, of course, is not in the same district as served by Representative Rogers. But is Madison County collaborating and working with Operation Unite?
We are. I mean, you can't help but utilize such a wonderful resource that we have just bordering us. Obviously, Estill County, our one of our bordering counties, is in the congressional district of Congressman Rogers. But nationwide, they are making huge strides in addressing ways to move towards solutions, both through policy and in practice. And so we have been very fortunate to have an excellent relationship with them, and they have been a sounding board to set us up with experts from across the country in this field.
We have just a few minutes remaining in this week's Eastern Standard, but if you have a question, a comment, a personal story you'd like to share, and you can do it briefly, please feel free to get on the line at 800-621-8890, 800-621-8890, Eastern Standard, live on this Thursday morning discussing the President's declaration of a national emergency regarding the opioid crisis. And Alex Ellswick, in recovery and studying, that's really the focus of your PhD studies at UK. Your reactions and your suggestions for where we need to go. It sounds like we've got a multi-pronged approach underway that we're hearing about so many different elements right now. Is that the answer, or is there one aspect or one kind of approach that you think is going to really be helpful?
Yeah, so about 2 weeks ago, I got the opportunity to sit down at a roundtable discussion with Eric Hargan, who's the acting secretary for the Department of Health and Human Services for the Fed. And it's worth clarifying that my understanding is what's been declared as a public health emergency and not a national emergency. And the consequence of that is we can't dip into the coffers of FEMA the way you would with hurricane relief. It's maybe not as grand scale as a national emergency.
Public health emergency is the terminology I should be using. Sorry.
Yeah, and I know, and the reason I say that, not to just be petty, I say that because I think money and resources are what we're always clamoring for more of. If you know, you heard a lot in this conversation about the need for continuum of care and wraparound services, and that's much, much easier said than done because you're talking about enacting social change. And I think another often overlooked component is is eliminating the stigma surrounding substance use disorders, because it affects access to treatment, it affects people's ability to get jobs, the way that they're treated in the workplace, it affects so many aspects. And so a lot of what Voices of Hope tries to do is to give talks that are just aimed at reducing stigma and showing people that there are 23 million Americans who are addicted, but there are also 23 million Americans who are in recovery. We just don't see them because they're silenced by the stigma.
Colleen Cheney of Madison County, what's the timeline for Madison County's effort, the Healing Center that you're putting together?
We're hoping to have final discussions in the next month on selecting a partner, and then at that point we'll move forward on construction. I just want to echo real quick, if you don't mind, with Alex's point. I think, you know, the concept of second chances, there's nothing if somebody wanted to know what we could do immediately that is free, it is educating those in our community, our business owners, about the concept of second chances. A lot of times we pay lip service to the concept of we want to make a difference. But when you say, will you take this individual in and mentor and shepherd them through in your business or in your church, a lot of times people are hesitant. And so I would encourage, if you want to get involved, find an organization that helps educate you and sets you up in a way to be a mentor in that process of second chances, and that costs zero.
So sorry, we're very short on time, but let's see if we can get Brandon, who's on line three, let's see if, get him on the air. Is he still there? And get his comment very briefly, Brandon. We're going to need to wrap up the program shortly, but what's your comment?
Hi. I guess, you know, my question kind of is, I'm a professional counseling major in a master's program, and I'm just wondering where, you know, we use super pure opiates sometimes in surgeries and things like that, where why aren't we having higher rates of addiction than we already are having? Because, the stuff that we use in surgeries can be highly addictive.
Okay, Brandon,
something we're missing?
Good question.
Like,
and
isolation?
All right, I think maybe Alex is the person to respond to that, if you can give a quick response to that.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little surprised to hear Brandon's surprised that their rates aren't higher than they are, because like I said, 80% of people who are currently addicted to heroin started with pain pills, and that was largely the effort of House Bill 333 that I got the opportunity to advocate for with Governor Bevin, that limits the supply of opioids for prescribers to 3 days, because that seems to be the critical pathway into addiction currently.
But the fact is, the medical community is certainly cooperating and working to help alleviate this problem, and probably looking very closely, doing a lot of looking inward about their use of opioids.
Absolutely.
Aaron Payne, what are we going to hear in terms of reporting in the next weeks from your beat of the opioid beat from the Ohio Valley Resource? And you have 20 seconds to tell us.
All right, then. Well, I just had a story that went out yesterday about an event on Friday taking place at Northern Kentucky University, where 16 different colleges and universities that have been researching the opioid epidemic will converge and discuss and share research on neonatal abstinence syndrome, which is babies being born in withdrawal due to their mother's substance use disorder while in the womb. So it'll be interesting to see how these institutions collaborate in the future.
We're looking forward to your continuing coverage, Aaron Payne. Thank you, Alex Ellswick, for being with us. Thank you, Colleen Chaney, for being with us on this week's Eastern Standard. The program is produced at WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. We'll be repeating Sunday evening at 6 and be available online as a podcast. Our producers are Emily Hutchinson, Brian Burkhardt, and Zach Redding. Technical director for Eastern Standard is Brian Bartlett. I'm John Hingsberg, and thanks for tuning in.